It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervie and Carrie Kasem.
Hey, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Gervie's Law. I am Alan Gervie. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn, and today I'm here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm here with my co-host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Well, thank you.
It's great to have you here.
It's always good to be here.
So this is the day before the Academy Awards, and we have a great show for everyone today. We are going to talk about national security. One of the movies that has been nominated for Best Picture, of course, is Bridge of Spies. And we are going to talk about the espionage trial of Rudolph Abel. And we're fortunate to have with us on Gervie's Law the only living attorney who actually played a part in the prosecution of Rudolph Abel. That would be Anthony Palermo. We're going to have him on the show in a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk about that trial. For those people who haven't seen the movie, they should see the movie. It's a great Steven Spielberg movie with Tom Hanks. Of course, you've seen the movie.
I saw it. Very good. Very good film.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Later on, we're going to have on the show Ken Sorensen. Ken Sorensen is U.S. Attorney's Office. He's with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the District of Hawaii, and he is prosecuting, guess what, Carrie? What do you think he's prosecuting?
I don't know, Alan.
Spies. That's the theme of the show. We are talking about spies. So we're going to talk to a legend, Anthony Palermo, and then we're going to talk to Ken Sorensen, who is actually becoming a legend in his own right. He prosecuted Nasir Gorvadia, and we're going to talk about that with Chinese espionage. We don't have a movie on that guy yet, but I'll tell you, when we talk about him, they need to have an Academy Award winning movie. Where are you watching the Academy Awards, by the way?
It's so funny. This is the first year I go to a few places, but I don't know. I don't know where I'm going to go.
You don't have, like you have for the Super Bowl party, a go-to place?
No, I know that Super Bowl. I wish he'd have an Academy Awards party there. I know.
But I think he's still probably recovering from that Super Bowl party. Later on the show, we're going to welcome back to Gervie's Law Ira Winkler. Ira Winkler is one of the foremost security professionals in the country. And we're actually going to talk about the big Apple versus FBI controversy with unlocking the phone, the iPhone. So Ira's going to help us out there. He is known as a modern day James Bond, and he knows everything about encryption and unlocking phones. So we're going to hear about that. You don't want to miss that. That's in our second half hour of Gervie's Law. But now let's talk about Bridge of Spies. So with us on the phone is Anthony Palermo. Anthony Palermo is the real life federal prosecutor. He was not yet 30 years old when he was put on a team to prosecute Rudolph Abel, Russian spy. And Anthony, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Happy to be with you.
It's great. It's great to have you. I know you're in, is it Rochester, New York?
Present time, I happen to be in sunny Palm Beach, Florida.
That's much better.
How nice.
But, you know, you're not completely retired. I know you still have your hand in the legal profession. In fact, the firm that you're affiliated with of counsel, didn't you screen the movie Bridge of Spies there?
I'm sorry I missed your first entrance. If you asked me about the movie, and I missed what your question was.
Did you screen the movie Bridge of Spies at the firm in Rochester that you're affiliated with?
Yes, we did. As a matter of fact, the firm knew that I had been involved and found it of interest, so they invited the entire firm, secretaries and spouses. We had over 200 people, and they invited me to give a short presentation about my involvement before we viewed the movie, and it was most enjoyable and interesting by colleagues of mine who didn't know about my background.
Did they actually ask you to consult on the film? Did anybody ask you?
Ask me about what?
To consult. Like, did Steven Spielberg call you up and say, hey, we have some questions. Did this really happen?
No. I've had no contact from DreamWorks or anyone related with the making of the movie. And I think that's not an uncommon thing. And I certainly don't resent it. And the movie, it's a super movie, and I do recommend it strongly. I have some pluses and minuses in terms of a personal critique. There is not a lot about the actual trial, and that's a totally different story, but it's perhaps even more fascinating. But the movie is an excellent movie, and I strongly recommend people attending and watching and enjoying.
So, Anthony, I was going to ask you, in the movie they portray one prosecutor, but isn't it the case that actually when the real trial took place, there are four of you who were working together prosecuting Mr. Abel?
You know, there are a lot of things about literary license, I guess, that you can forgive in movie making. And to be fair, they really don't intend to cover the trial other than the fact that there was a trial and a conviction. And there are a lot of things that are wrong about that aspect of the case. Certainly there was no backdooring by Jim Donovan, who was an extraordinarily honorable and competent lawyer. He did not go back behind the door and talk to the judge privately. They totally did not portray the honorable Judge Byers in a way that was suitable. He was a 35-year veteran, well-respected. There were a lot of little things that I think tried to develop a theme, which was their way of doing it. But the outrage at the time of sentence, where the judge did not impose the death penalty, never occurred. It was a dignified a proceeding, and it was ruled with not only dignity, but strong rulings on both sides. I felt the wrath of the court as well as the defense lawyers. So it was a speedy trial. There's no question about that. And it was a unique trial. And none of that really is covered. And it's relevant only to the extent that you have convicted the highest ranking Soviet spy in American history.
Did you?
And then it went on to address a very important question of the exchange which took place. The reasons why the exchange, and they did an excellent job in focusing a lot of attention on that and doing it in a way that I think was accurate and intriguing.
So the death penalty was never brought up, because that was a pretty pivotal scene. You know, it's like trying to get this judge not to give the guy a death sentence. So that was totally false, all of it?
Yeah, totally false. We all appeared before the judge in camera. We did not take a position on the death penalty. We said it's a very serious offense when one nation sends spies secretly to try to uncover and detect security information and atomic energy information, and it deserved a very serious sentence, and the court knew that. And Jim Donovan, to his credit, said, look, that being the case, there was a conviction, and the court will have to sentence him, but consider the possibility for an exchange, that someday there may be an American agent who needs to be, we need to bring back home. And so Jim was very insightful, and indeed that is exactly what happened. And that's what the movie really concentrates on, the exchange of U-2 pilot Francis Gary Powers, who, as you know, died in an accident when he returned in Los Angeles after he was released in 1962. And why the negotiation was made, who initiated it, how the respective spies were treated.
Oh, we just lost him.
We lost Anthony. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Hopefully we'll get him back when we come back. We were talking to Anthony Palermo, who is the real-life spy prosecutor from the film Bridge of Spies.
Sorry.
And you're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem, and we are going to talk more after this message.
It is Dr. Drew.
And I'm Mike Catherwood.
And on the next Midday Live, Mike,
we're going to talk about that big Ku Klux Klan rally that went on.
The Oscars.
Klan rally?
Well,
because it's so white.
That we'll find.
Because they're just racist and white and horrible.
And Chris Rock will have done what he did. We'll
Klansman.
Find out about that and more. Robin Sachs joins
Grand
you.
Wizard Chris Rock.
Midday Live will take your calls on the next Midday Live. Talk Radio 790 KBC.
To be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Lopez. You see miracles all the time at our children's hospital. The first smile after surgery. A girl walking when they said she wouldn't. Parents getting good news. But miracles never come easy. That's why as great as children's hospitals are, they need our support to keep miracles happening. Please join me in supporting Children's Miracle Network Hospitals. Put your money where the miracles are.
I'm Rocky Moselle with StarRegistry.com. Since we were children, we've been told to reach for the stars. It was great advice. Now it's a great gift. Name a star after someone. For $54 and a call to 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com, we will name a star after someone very special to you and send an incredible personalized gift. The new star name will be recorded in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office. Call the Star Registry, 800-282-3333 or visit StarRegistry.com for the hottest gift.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yes, Carrie, it's that time of the year.
I did this song in a show. This is so weird. It's bringing back some memories. In high school.
Really?
Yeah.
You were up for the Academy Awards in high school?
No, there was a song written to this. It's, you know, Hollywood, Hollywood. And we did this whole medley for Hollywood, and this was part of it.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's the history behind it. They don't just pick the song for the awards show just out of the blue.
There's history.
And we are talking history today. This is Gervey's Law. I am Alan Gervey. And we are talking about Academy Award-winning and nominated films. Today, we're talking about Bridge of Spies. We're fortunate to have with us the only living member of the prosecuting team against Rudolf Abel, the Russian spy in Bridge of Spies. It's Anthony Palermo. Before we took the break, Anthony, you were telling us about the fact that they didn't really focus on the trial. But isn't it true, and you were just barely almost 30, isn't it true that you thought it was going to be like a two-day trial and it ended up being 6 months?
No, it's not quite. The trial actually took 14 days.
What?
I was actually 27 years of age. Jim Donovan, who was the court-assigned trial lawyer, was 43. And it was certainly a speedy trial. The actual testimony started on October the 14th, and the jury came back on October 25th. So I had been sent up there, I was told, for 2 days, and I brought a toothbrush and two white shirts, and I stayed 6 months, and we investigated. We had preliminary motions. We had the indictment. It was questionable as to whether or not we ever would get an indictment because we had a Russian spy who turned agent but was refusing to testify. And so it got to be very exciting. And then ultimately a jury was had, and The important aspect of that is that we gave complete constitutional due process to a person who was from a communist country and out trying to destroy us. So that's one of the very important issues that needs to be remembered, that it was an extraordinarily important episode in showing who we are, the core values of an American democracy.
And at that time, Anthony, did you ever think that he was getting too much due process? I mean, you were an idealistic guy, just got out of law school, and sometimes we tend to say, well, wait a second, this guy is a Russian spy. Why are we giving him this due process?
No, and you know, that suggestion is really part of the movie, which it didn't really happen. It assumed that, for instance, the judge takes the position that with Donovan saying, you know, what are you going to do? You're just in here to look like you're defending him. And that wasn't the case at all. It was a very aggressive defense. It was not only Jim Donovan, but two former assistant United States attorneys from the Southern District. They knew that we had the facts, and so they went on the law, the search and seizure issue, trying to keep out of evidence, the important incriminating evidence that we had discovered. And I worked on all of that search and seizure and interviewed the FBI agents and the Immigration and Naturalization agents, and there were preliminary hearings on that before the jury trial. And we were intent on giving due process, and we gave it. And, of course, the case went all the way to the Supreme Court, where they had not one but two separate arguments on the issue of the search and seizure, and it finally came down that it was a valid search and seizure by a 5-4 majority. So we didn't take anything for granted. We vigorously prosecuted the case, and it was vigorously defended.
It's interesting when you say 5-4 majority, because that's something that we're facing in today's Supreme Court with the appointment of another Supreme Court justice. And it could have gone the other way with the makeup of the court at the time.
There's no question about it. And it was a strong dissent. It was extraordinary for the court to have heard total argument and then set it down for another argument, and the arguments exceeded 2 hours. So the search and seizure issues in this case, there was no prior precedent on whether or not you could have search and seizure incident to a civil administrative warrant, which was issued by the Immigration and Naturalization Agency. And, of course, not only my internal security division, the Immigration and Naturalization Agency and the FBI were all part of the same team. That's the United States Justice Department. And the argument was made that we couldn't seize incident to a civil arrest warrant. We had to prosecute on a criminal case of espionage. That was the thrust of the argument that Jim Donovan and Arne Freeman and Tom Devevoy made. And they made it obviously effectively. We had a complete majority in the Second Circuit, 3-0, affirming the constitutionality of the search and seizure. And it got down to 5-4 in the Supreme Court.
Now, Abel seemed like a nice guy. At least that's how he was portrayed in the film. He seemed like
Is that true?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. And I was so impressed with the Mark Rylance's performance. After I saw that movie 2 times, I took the liberty of writing to his agent and asked them to please forward it to him, because I thought he nailed the persona of the man so accurately. I believe that I was really watching and listening to Abel. And the important one, very significant aspect of this case, which isn't covered in the movie, for 10 days from the time of the indictment to the time after arraignment until Donovan was appointed, he wasn't appointed until the end of August. The indictment came down on August 9th. The dialogue between the court and Abel is absolutely superb. Wow. And it was dignified, quiet, respectful, precise. And you wouldn't believe the questions that Abel asked. Indeed, when the court says, you know, because this is a death penalty case, you would be entitled to 2 lawyers. And Abel says, would 2 be better than 1? Now, if you've seen the movie, you can understand how I laughed when I reread that transcript.
Oh.
And And then it came along after the judge said, I will appoint two if you wish. He then said, would you consider asking the Bar Association for suggestions? The suggestion that he appoint somebody from the Bar Association came from the defendant himself before he had a lawyer.
Wow.
And it's absolutely remarkable. I have since received an acknowledgement from Mark Rylance, because after I told him how impressed I was with his performance and how when I reread the transcript, I hear his voice and I see his image, I said, it's a Oscar-worthy performance, and I hope you get it.
Awesome.
And, of course, I've since had more communications with him, and here he is nominated, and he's been nominated for the Globe. And even if he doesn't win it, it is an absolutely superb performance. I think it's a small role, in effect, but it's a huge role, and it really makes the movie.
I know we're running out of time here, but I just have a question about Abel himself. Was
yes.
he okay when he crossed that bridge? Because he made a comment, you know,
there, yes.
to Tom
you
Hanks.
That's an extraordinarily important question, and that's how good the movie was, because you got involved, everyone gets involved.
Yes.
And so that dialogue, asking him, and I know the answer to that, because I've been a student of Abel and his life. His name wasn't really Abel, and he wasn't Russian.
Right.
He was British. And he was born in northern England, and his name was Willie Fisher. But at the time of the exchange, which is just after the movie ends, his wife and his daughter were there in Potsdam to greet him.
Oh,
so that's
fantastic.
The answer to your question, and people should know that. However, when he got back to Moscow, because he had been caught in the United States, they couldn't use him in the way that he was deserving. He was absolutely incredible master spy with an absolutely incredible history of accomplishments. But so he was more of a token figure for 10 years. He died of cancer 10 years after the exchange in 1972. And at the time, he was buried in a tomb that said Rudolf Abel, which wasn't his name.
Wow.
And his family and his colleagues in the KGB protested. And they finally added to the tombstone his real name, Willie Fisher.
You know,
I'm glad he's okay.
It's fascinating to hear these stories. I just want to bring on the line, Anthony, for a moment, Ken Sorensen. Ken Sorensen is assistant U.S. attorney in District of Hawaii, and he is a present-day prosecutor of these spy cases. And he's very noteworthy for the Nasir Gorvadia case, the Chinese espionage case from a few years back. Ken, welcome to Gervie's Law. First, are you there?
Thanks,
Ken.
Alan.
Oh, there you are.
Thanks,
so, before we take a break, because we have to take a break in 2 minutes, what would you say to Anthony Palermo? Because, of course, you're doing the same work that he did some 50 years ago, and obviously through his career. How have things changed, and what would you ask him since you have him on the line with you?
Well, gosh, I mean, I guess I would spend a lot of time with Anthony off the line asking him some questions, because I watched the movie last night and it was fascinating. But I agree with Anthony on one front, and that is I think that federal prosecutors are getting short shift when it comes to being portrayed in movies. And they should have given Anthony more face time, and they should have given the trial maybe a little more face time. But, you know, Hollywood's got to tell a story, and sometimes they take literary license. But trials can be fascinating, and I'm sure this one was fascinating. But we were all left kind of wondering, I think, what happened.
Yeah. Let me add to what Ken has said. And it was vicious, because they had a symbolized a prosecutor. He was sort of a combination of CIA and prosecutor. And the idea that the government, either in the CIA, the FBI, or the U.S. attorney, were trying to interfere with the attorney-client privilege and saying okay to Tom Hanks playing the role of Jim Donovan, tell us what he's telling you. That never happened and never would happen. And it was a great disservice to our system of justice and the prosecutors.
Can you both stay with us for a couple of minutes? We need to take a break right now, but it's just fascinating listening to both of you, and I want to get into some of the work that Ken's doing. Would it be okay, guys, if you can stay with us for another couple of minutes?
Yeah,
okay,
no problem.
With me.
Great. Thanks a lot. So everyone here is really, their jaws dropped. We've got everyone in the studio listening to this. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem. We'll be right back.
And now, a touching moment while staying in touch with Geico.
It was a warm summer day. I was just sitting on a porch watching a babbling brook roll by. Then, out of the blue, I got an update from my Geico app saying my claim had been processed. I felt so connected to nature, to Geico. I stayed there the whole afternoon until that guy told me to stop trespassing on his porch. Sheesh, what was his problem?
Claim status updates, just a few taps away on the Geico app.
I just feel like something's missing.
I know. What we had was so big.
And warm. And bright.
And yellow.
Oh, I really miss the sun.
No sun? No problem. Centrum, the most trusted multivitamins, now have more of the vitamin D3 you need. Get the vitamin D you could be missing this winter with Centrum Multivitamins, now our highest level of D3 ever. Check Sunday's newspaper for a coupon.
Do you go to the dentist as often as you should? Checkups are an easy thing to put off. A lot of people do it, especially if they don't have good dental insurance. But in the long run, that could end up costing you more. We all know dental bills can be really expensive. Even a simple cleaning can cost $150. And a more expensive procedure like a crown or root canal, well, that can cost you hundreds more. If you've put off going to the dentist because you don't have dental insurance, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-500-2605. We have dental coverage for less than a dollar a day. Real dental insurance that can help pay for over 300 procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. Plus, you can see any dentist you'd like and never pay a deductible. We'll send you a free information kit with all the details. Call today and you can get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. 1-800-500-2605. That's 1-800-500-2605.
You've heard of Murphy's Law, but have you heard of Gervie's Law? Anything that can go wrong can be made right. Now, here are your hosts, Carrie Kasem and Alan Gervie.
Thanks, Colin. I like that music. I'm doing a little investigation here. We're talking about spies and espionage because the movie Bridge of Spies is up for Best Picture tomorrow on the Academy Awards. And we have with us Anthony Palermo, who is the only living lawyer who took part in the trial of Rudolf Abel, who is the subject matter of the film Bridge of Spies. And also on the line, we have Ken Sorensen. And Ken Sorensen is Assistant U.S. Attorney in the District of Hawaii, an award-winning attorney who has done a lot of prosecution of espionage cases, including Nasir Gawadia, who is known for Chinese espionage. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Ken, you were saying that you watched Bridge of Spies last night. When you were watching it, did it ring true with some of the work that you've been doing in your work as a prosecutor?
Gosh, you know, it was a different era, really, and I'm sure Anthony and I could talk about this for several hours, but it was a different era. There were different standards. Now there's the Classified Information Procedures Act, which kind of handles classified information trials. I really don't know if the trial that Anthony did was had any classified information in it. I don't believe it did, and they probably didn't need to. The court didn't have to exercise any of its inherent power to mask any of the classified information because there may not have been any. I think that
we basically had intercepts that very much was involved, and that was handled, I think, in a diplomatic way as well as a professional way. We stipulated that what would happen if we were able to put in records of the national intelligence agencies, that there would be intercepts of information transmitted at certain times. And it was quite relevant because we did not know who Abel was, and his name wasn't Abel. We knew him only by the name of Hart. And he had to be actually surveilled to find him. And the times that he was in a studio that we saw him 3 weeks after we learned that he had been in the United States, and then lost him, by the way, after he was being tailed, and then didn't find him again for another 3 weeks. But again, we had to prove that this transmission was taking place at the very time that we finally found him in the studio and were able to trail him to the hotel where he was found. So we handled it I think appropriately so, and it did present some issues dealing with classified information.
It's so amazing, though, to think of the difference in terms of the discovery process back then than it is now. We lawyers,
we were the first case to be tried under the Jenks thing. We had to turn over statements. That law had just been passed in the summer of 1957. And it was the first major case where we had to start turning over statements of witnesses. And, of course, we had statements and grand jury testimony of a fellow KGB spy who turned on his boss.
Wow. You know, just in terms of gathering information, I'm sure Ken knows it's an elaborate process involving a lot of electronic communication, internet access, and everything that we take for granted today. Ken, think about doing your job 50 years ago. How do you think you would have been taking care of this business when you take for granted what you do now?
Boy, I think, you know, I think that it, no disrespect to Anthony at all, but I think that obviously under the restraints and controls that we have today and a lot of the discovery obligations that we have today, it's really difficult. And these cases now are tremendously difficult to try. It's doable, and the Guadia case is a prime example of that it is doable, but it was doable, but it took, 4 months of trial. We had probably 200 or 300 items of classified information that we had to mask. What Anthony was referencing, it appears the court probably utilized its inherent power to concoct a summary or have the parties reach a stipulation on a summary of what evidence would show so that actual classified information wouldn't be revealed.
Right.
And, you know, the Classified Information Procedures Act really does that today. It allows for a system of summaries and stipulations and substitutions where you can actually substitute in any way a summary or some other mechanism to try classified information in an open courtroom. In our case, we had top secret special access program information, and I utilized an alphanumeric system that I came up with to mask certain classified facts. In our case, it was mostly about numbers. Guadia had input a series of sensitivity parameters on U.S. missile systems that he had worked into an algorithm that would show how his design, a nozzle design, would improve the performance of a Chinese cruise missile and make it stealthy. And so we came up with a system where those individual classified numbers would get alphanumeric designators. And we probably had 200 or 300 of them, and we had a key that the parties would use at trial. And when you wanted to reference these numbers and try to show how the number wasn't exactly right or was different than something that might be material, then they could utilize that alphanumeric system, you know, whether it was N6 or A14 or whatever. And the witness would have the key, and so would all the other parties, and we were able to get through it that way. But it was difficult, and it's a difficult process, and that's what the SEPA process is all about. But
I have a question for both of you because, you know, Anthony Palermo, Ken Sorensen, two lawyers on the line that I've never had this, that prosecute spies, okay? This is a new one. This is a new one for me, and pretty amazing. So I have to ask you about this. There's a movie coming out. It's coming out in September. It's called Snowden. I want to know what each of you think of this man. To some, he's a hero. To some, he's the exact opposite. Mr. Palermo, I want to know, what do you think of Edward Snowden?
Well, you hit the nail, and going back to what Ken said, it's a totally different world in espionage today. In my time, the Cold War, we had U-2 planes flying at 80,000 feet with great imaging capabilities and getting extraordinarily important information to us. The Russians had an intricate spy system where they spent millions of dollars and tens of years setting up covert operations and then having microfiche messages put into hollowed-out pencils and hollowed-out bolts buried in steps and so forth to get this information. Today, it's all done electronically. As Ken points out, it's a totally different world today, And it's much more global. It isn't just one nation. It's we have foes all over the place. We know that every nation and every segment of nations spies on the other, and that will continue to be. So it's an extraordinarily complex, and it's getting more so. And now you get down to the Apple contest, which is the Snowden contest also.
Yes,
and it's all happening out there.
We are going to have with us shortly Ira Winkler, who is known as the modern-day James Bond, and he's going to talk a little bit about the Apple versus the FBI. So, Ken, we're just going to, just to answer, because I can't let Carrie ask a question and not have it answered. So
thank you.
A minute or less, tell us about Snowden, and then we're going to let Anthony go and thank him for being here. But, Ken, I want to hear about Snowden.
Okay, well, good luck with it.
Wait, Anthony, before we wait a second, we'll let Anthony go. But Anthony, before we let you go, we need a prediction on Best Picture for the Academy Awards tomorrow night. Who's going to win Best Picture?
Well, I'm not really a great critique, so I'm not going to answer that question. I do have favorites, but I will tell you, I don't think my candidate for Best Supporting Actor will win. I think he deserves it. He didn't win Best Support in the Globe or in others, but I would like to see Mark Rylance win Bridges Vice because I think he was spectacular.
And I agree with you. I think Sylvester Stallone, though, is the sentimental favorite in that category, and we are going to be pulling for you for Bridge of Spies. I'm not sure it's going to win it, but it certainly is a worthy film. And thank you, Anthony Palermo, for everything that you have offered to Gervie's Law today. It's just been really enlightening to listen to you.
My pleasure, and have a good rest of the show. I know it will be.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Ken, so tell us, before we talk about Gawadi, I want to just hear the Snowden, because, again, Carrie actually sits with a gun to my head, and if I don't let her questions get through and the answers come about, then I'm in big trouble.
We live in California. We can't protect ourselves like that. Remember?
Well, I'm going to Hawaii soon. So
there's no protecting yourself here in California.
I have Ken on my side. Okay, go ahead, Ken.
Okay, so, Carrie, that's a great question. I mean, the interesting thing is, you know, most of these espionage cases these days, they can come out of anywhere, really. But we here in Hawaii are kind of at the point of the spear because we have a lot of programs that occur here. A lot of evidence collection occurs here by a number of individuals. But we did the Gawadia case here. We did the Benjamin Bishop case here. We've had many others that we've worked on that have either gone to the military courts. And, of course, Edward Snowden came out of here. But, you know, that is an ongoing departmental case. Remember that he has been formally charged with a crime at this point. So you're not going to find me, a Department of Justice guy, having the leeway to speak openly about the Snowden case. Obviously, he's been charged. He should come back. We would like to see him come back.
That's a nice way to put it. Like, we'd like to see him come back.
But at this stage, obviously, it's not something that I can comment on.
Okay.
This forum.
That makes sense. You know, we are just going to talk quickly about Gawadia. Tell us how it felt to be successful in a very difficult case, because by all accounts, this guy was a real winner. And when I say winner, I don't mean it as a compliment. I don't know if his mental health was in question, but he seemed to really not have much of a conscience, did he?
Well, I mean, just a little background on Noshir Gawadia for your listeners, because they may not know much about the case. But Noshir Gawadia was a guy that developed his knowledge base in a classified U.S. program. That was the Black Project. That was the one that developed the B-2 bomber, which is thought by many to be the world's most dangerous weapon system, most devastating weapon system, certainly. It's capable of penetrating, you know, enemy territory and carrying a large nuclear load. So, you know, if a plane can fly undetected in your airspace with nuclear payloads, that's something that concerns folks, and it concerns our adversary. So it's anybody that worked in that program that's got a knowledge base is going to be somebody that's subject to recruitment by foreign powers. Gawadia was one of the primary engineers on that program in the infrared stealth area. And he left the program. He continued to work in some U.S. programs. Eventually, he became very disgruntled over a number of issues. And that's kind of the recipe for somebody flipping and maybe becoming an exporter of U.S. know-how or a spy, so to speak. And so he had that kind of personality where he felt like he'd been wronged. He was striving for recognition for his work. He felt like his boss has got the credit for the B-2 bomber, and he got nothing. He found himself in a situation where he had an $18,000 mortgage here in Hawaii with a massive oceanside estate that he had built, largely with funds derived from other violations. And he was also susceptible to sexual recruitment. So you've got kind of all the recipes there for what might make a guy flip. And ultimately, he, through a Chinese access agent, ultimately made an approach to China. They were more than happy to deal with him. And then over the course of 2 years, he helped them design a stealthy cruise missile.
Yeah, and
that's how do you find when somebody's doing, do you actually, if somebody's that, they have this classification that is so high, are there people constantly watching people like that?
You know, they're really not, because there are so many of them. Because remember that in today's complex world, the United States develops its military technologies largely through the use of contractors like General Electric and Northrop, Lockheed. Huge defense contractors with massive staffs of engineers that work in classified, highly classified programs, top secret special access program projects. And so you have a lot of guys who have a lot of information that can be marketable on a worldwide stage. Unfortunately, there are just too many of them, so you hope that they abide by their non-disclosure oaths. You hope that others who might recognize an individual who might be susceptible to recruitment or susceptible to flipping, you hope that somebody says something. But in the case of Guadi, he was able to slip through, you know, any safeguards that there are, and ultimately became probably one of the larger exporters of U.S. defense know-how in U.S. history.
So we have to take a quick break. I'd love to talk about Guadi a little more. We are going to talk a little bit about the Facebook, the Apple versus FBI deal when we get back. Ken, you can stay with us for another segment?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Thanks very much. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We'll be right back.
That was Hillary barking like a dog. And I got to say, she does a hell of a dog. That's pretty good. She could have played the dog in Annie. That's a pretty damn good dog. If you heard that during the Westminster Kennel Club, you'd say that's a possible blue ribbon winner. And you can do your own B-word jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going there. I'm taking the high road.
McIntyre in the morning.
With Terry Rayelmer. Mornings at 5 on 790 KABC.
Any person who makes or causes to be made any knowingly false or fraudulent material statement or material representation for the purposes of obtaining workers' compensation benefits is guilty of a felony.
Another day at work. The pain is getting worse, and I'm afraid to say anything because I need this job, and I don't want to get fired. If I wasn't the only one supporting the family, I'd quit.
Is this you? Are you suffering every day while your injuries get worse, and there seems to be nowhere to turn? Or do you have an injury that was brought on gradually by repetitive motion, and now you can't perform your job duties at all? For over 35 years, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn has represented those who have sustained an injury on the job or have become disabled as a result of work. They're the experts in workers' compensation. You need an advocate. You need someone who cares about the injured worker. You need the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn to get you through the nightmare. Friends, if you're suffering with a cumulative work injury, the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn is in business to help you. Find out more. Call the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, 855-4-RGW-LAW. That's 855-4-RGW-LAW. Or go to rgwlawfirm.com. First consultations are free.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Oh, yes, some great music, spy music. This whole show has been full of entertaining music. We're talking about espionage and national security. We have Ken Sorensen on the line. He's the assistant U.S. attorney in the District of Hawaii. And we're just going to close out our discussion of Guadi because I want to get to Ira Winkler, who's standing by. With Guadi, Ken, he was convicted, 32 years in prison. Was that the correct decision? And sentence?
Well, certainly it was the correct decision.
Yeah, right.
He He was basically our own Wernher von Braun. And if you remember Wernher von Braun, who was the German scientist, who rocket scientist, who developed all of Nazi Germany's rockets, at the end of World War II, we whisked him away and brought him to the United States, and he really became the father of the modern U.S. rocket system. And he was largely instrumental in getting us to the moon. And so really, when you think of that kind of export of know-how, that's what Gaudia was. Gaudia was a guy who developed a massive amount of know-how, and then he was able to export that to another country. And remember, we spent trillions of dollars developing the know-how that he then was able to go and export to another country for really pennies on the dollar. And stealth know-how is the most important know-how, because when you think about putting defense articles into your enemy's space without them knowing about it, that's a problem. And we certainly don't want our enemies to have that capability. So Gaudia, under the United States Sentencing Guidelines, Gaudia could have gotten and should have gotten perhaps a life sentence.
There you go. Now the prosecutor in you is coming out.
Well, I advocated for that. But we have to remember also that Gaudia was, I think, 65 or 67 at the time he was sentenced. And he got a sentence of 32 years. So, you know, I think the sentence sent a message, which was really what we wanted to do, is say, hey, look, all you guys out there like him, this is what's going to happen. This is what can happen. And we have the capability to try these cases in an open federal courtroom. So remember that.
Yeah. You know, we want to move on. It's really exciting. And I would love to have you on another time, talk about some of the other spy cases, because people love this stuff. But in our last 10 minutes, we want to talk a little bit about the Apple and the FBI issue. And Ken, if you stay on the line, maybe we'll get a comment from you, because you are in the know on some of these national security issues, obviously dealing with espionage cases. Ira Winkler, welcome back to Gervie's Law. Ira Winkler is the president of Secure Mentum and co-host of cybersecurity podcast The Arari Report. He has been known as the modern-day James Bond. Ira, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Ira, we got to get right into this. Tell us, you have commented, and I've been reading all your blog and your articles. You've been sought after on this issue of the security issue and the free individual rights issue. Tell us about your take on what Apple has done to try to block the FBI from unlocking the iPhone.
Well, what they really have done is gone on a PR campaign. What's amazing to me is Apple is becoming very vocal in saying, we are here to protect things. But the problem is that they're very misleading as far as what's being asked of them and what they're actually doing. Again, all that's being asked of them is to help in a laboratory basically modify set back their operating system, essentially one version or two, and then taking that version in a lab and using their digital certificate, which is like an important piece of code, to upload the update onto that one phone in the lab. And they are essentially saying somehow this will cripple and make all phones insecure, which is a flat-out lie. The only thing that makes it insecure is if they decide to release it or if somebody hacks it away. But if they can hack that piece of software away, there's much more at stake than this one little function, because it is a very minute function in the security of the iPhone software.
But aren't we concerned overall about protecting people's rights from a general perspective, not necessarily simply in this particular case? Where do we draw the line?
Well, here's what the line is. Right now, yes, there's a potential precedent being set, which is, can the government tell a manufacturer, we want you to basically modify your software in a laboratory and then help us undo a security feature? That requires a warrant to be done. What they are doing is extrapolating and creating this whole FUD, as it's known in the security industry, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and saying, well, if we do it here, the whole iPhone software is blowing up and the rest of the, you know, is going to be rendered insecure,
right?
Which is frankly a flat-out lie. It only happens if they choose to say, look, we want the easy way out, And instead of doing this one phone at a time, we'll just say forget the whole function and put it in there. And they'll never do that. So they're really just trying to stay away from saying vendors have to assist the government in by modifying software, even in laboratory purposes.
Ken, I just want to ask you quickly your take on this. And I know that you can't represent the U.S. government in your comments, but, you know, hey, this is part of discovery in a lot of cases that you may be involved with.
Well, you know, once again, Alan, you're going to get me in trouble with the Attorney General.
I know that. That's my intent.
And Carrie wants that, too. I can hear
exactly,
her
yes.
Egging you on.
That's
here,
right.
But, well, you know, I can't really speak directly about this, and I won't. But generally talking about this, I mean, it really looks to me like we're coming in our society down to figuring out really what is privacy in the cyber world. And what we see is, I mean, massive threats, as Ira, I'm sure, is aware, massive threats are arising in the cyber world. And a phone is nothing more than our modern-day access to the cyber world. And so there's a lot of concern and a lot of information on those phones, and clearly they're going to be a fighting ground. And if we talk about encryption and
that's right,
if we talk about locking us out, I mean, there's a lot of concern about people having their individual, you know, articles, whether it's an iPad or iPhone or whatever, being completely hidden from anybody looking at it. But the fact is, the protections of the Fourth Amendment are there for everybody. And it seems to me that that's sufficient. We are protected by the Fourth Amendment, but there are processes that...
Well, and I agree, and I don't want to cut you off because we're running out of time, but I agree.
Okay, sorry.
There is a legal process here, and that's what the Fourth Amendment's for. But Ira, you don't necessarily follow that legal process in what you do. Could you hack into this phone? Because I know you've said on our show before that hacking is a lot easier than people think.
Here's the issue. What the government once done is a very, very minor edit to the software. It requires having Apple's digital certificate, and with that resource, it is trivial to do what the government once done. As far as hacking this particular function, it can be done, but it's not going to – this is a very, very difficult hack because there is no room for error. If you make 10 mistakes, the phone's deleted, and that – is not necessarily totally stoppable, but you need the capability, assuming anybody has the capability, that NSA would have to recover the type of data that would potentially be deleted.
Ira, why don't more companies do it? You work with companies all the time protecting their interests. Why don't they have this type of security set up?
They do. I mean, here's the problem. They do have this type of security set up. This is, however, security in the perfect sense, where the person with the information is frankly dead. You know, there's the old saying that if two people have a secret, the only way anybody can keep it is if both of them are dead. So in this case, the secret passcode, the person is dead. That's an extreme example. If there were other cases, if the guy was alive, you could watch him shoulder surf it. In other words, watch him type the code in. You could potentially see if he wrote it down someplace or something like that, but it's not impossible, but this is a very unique case, and it's an accident that this did happen.
You know, that's great, because I really appreciate you saying that, because I know that you have so much ability and so much information to do it, and you're actually acknowledging that this is a tough one, and this real issue is very tough. And, you know, we have to look at individual rights and utilitarianism versus a specific situation. There's a lot of issues. We'll watch it play out. Ira Winkler, I want to thank you for being on Gervie's Law, and we'll look forward to having you on again with this problem or others. Ken Sorensen, thanks for all your input today. Enjoy the rest of the day, both of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Carrie.
Bye.
Yes.
Bye, guys.
Carrie, what a great show.
Awesome.
Who's winning? Awesome. Who's winning Best Picture? Quick.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. This is too much for me. I'm going to have to go with Best Picture, The Martian.
Martian. I think Martian might win. My sentimental favorite is Spotlight.
But
I think Martian might win.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. Enjoy the Academy Awards tomorrow night.
The proceeding was furnished by Roland Gervie and Wynn. Roland Gervie and Wynn were responsible for its content.
News. Talk.
Evolve. Your 2016 election headquarters. KABC. Los Angeles. Orange County. A Cumulus Station.